You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. Today we take a look at efforts to open up Iowa as the coronavirus continues to spread. On Monday, Iowa's governor announced she plans to ease some restrictions on businesses in smaller counties in the state starting on Friday. Woodbury County isn't included because of a recent spike in COVID-19 cases. As Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer reports, metro area mayors want action on all sides of the river.
Mayors in five local cities put out a statement on Monday for all public health organizations to increase the level of transparency in reporting COVID-19 after a surge of new cases.
And we're getting disjointed information that needs to be more coordinated between the health agencies in our tri-state area.
That's Sioux City Mayor Bob Scott. He, along with the mayors of Sergeant Bluff, South Sioux, Dakota City, and North Sioux, asked state and local health departments to provide more information about specific locations of outbreaks or community spread. Siouxland District Health says state law prohibits the release of that type of information.
We don't seem to know where these cases are coming from, so do you have a neighbor that worked in one of these plants? Do you need to be more careful around that person? Those sort of things, I think, are a concern for all of us.
The mayor's call on local businesses to take responsibility for any outbreaks and provide accurate information to employees and the public.
Not trying to pick on any companies, but if there's a plant that has three or four outbreaks, you know, we don't hear about it until to clean it. You know, I admire Interbake. They shut down right away and they re-cleaned that plant. Well, I think that was a great move on their part.
Mayor Scott says the metro area is at the epicenter of a national outbreak. Cases in Woodbury and Dakota County recently jumped with more than 600 confirmed cases each, plus a total of two deaths.
But we all know the hot spot in the nation right now is this tri-state area. But because our numbers only show Iowa, it doesn't give a real picture of what's going on in this area.
Local health officials say more testing also led to the higher numbers. The mayors also urged the governors of Iowa, South Dakota, and Nebraska to use caution in lifting restrictions across the tri-state region.
You shut us down probably earlier than you needed to. So don't open us up at the same time as others, because now we're peaking yet. We haven't even peaked.
Mayor Scott says businesses and citizens need to continue to do what they can to reduce the spread of the virus.
This isn't over yet, and we do need to remain very vigilant about how we approach this.
For Siouxland Public Media News, I'm Sheila Brummer.
The first confirmed case of coronavirus in Dakota County appeared on Sunday, April 12th. The first case in Woodbury County appeared back on March 21st. A day after, the mayors in the Sioux City metro area called for more transparency from local businesses in reporting cases of COVID-19. Tyson Foods in Dakota City said it would not share information surrounding the number of impacted employees. Tyson says it does take extensive measures to protect team members, including taking temperatures of workers. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds was asked if packing plants should release more information about the number of positive cases. She plans to look more into the privacy issues raised by reporters, but she says it's important to keep the plants open.
Our processing plants have done everything that they can and continue to work to make sure that their employers are working in a safe environment.
Meanwhile, when asked about the concerns of metro area mayors, Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts gave a brief answer.
Sheila Brummer, Siouxland Public Media. Five mayors in Sioux City metro area put out a statement yesterday asking for more transparency when it comes to COVID-19. There's very little information coming in from Tyson Foods plant in Dakota City, Nebraska. I enclosed the letter. What is government's plan to do to help? Sioux City appears to be a hotspot in the nation right now, and Sioux City Mayor Bob Scott is worried our community will be suffering if something isn't done to help in our area of the state. So we put out the data with regard to Dakota County. It is all there on the website, so that gets updated daily. I'd say I just refer you to the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services website, and you'll see the information for Dakota County.
On Tuesday, Dakota County saw 21 new cases for a total of 629. On Wednesday, Woodbury County confirmed 46 more cases for a total of almost 750. Siouxland District Health says 142 of those cases have met the criteria to be released from public health monitoring. Pork processor Seaboard Triumph said on Tuesday 11 workers have tested positive. The plant reported its first case on April 16th. And President Donald Trump has signed an executive order on the food supply. The U.S. is working with Tyson Foods during this coronavirus pandemic. The order will use the Defense Production Act to classify meat processing as critical infrastructure to keep production plants open and prevent a shortage of chicken, pork, and other meat on the American supermarket shelves. Speaking in the Oval Office, Trump said the order would address what he called liability problems in the food supply chain. Still, the question remains, does the president's action cover all kinds of liability for meat processing plants? Indiana University professor Todd Ha recently wrote about this issue. The associate professor of business law and ethics says that the responsible corporate officer doctrine could come into play. Ha says the doctrine has not been used very often, but it could be raised for executives that run food processing plants during the coronavirus pandemic.
So the responsible corporate officer doctrine is an anomaly, really, in the criminal law. And it essentially allows executives or managers to be held criminally liable for the wrongdoing of their company or their employees without any level of intent. So it's a strict liability crime under certain circumstances where an executive can be held criminally liable even if they've never set foot in the factory, they've never participated in the wrongdoing, and in fact, they didn't have any knowledge of it. And that's really a quirk in American criminal law.
And you think this could come into play here when we talk about packing plants and these, a lot of workers there have been ill, some have already been sent home, some of them are closed, and there's this executive order that the president issued to try and keep these plants online.
Yeah, I think this is a question of risk for these executives and food processing plant managers. So what they need to be thinking about is not only all the food safety and things like that and kind of the normal operations of a plant, but also what their liability might be. They're going to be thinking about civil liability lawsuits by employees, maybe they get sick, or consumers potentially. But they also have to be thinking about this responsible corporate officer idea, because if the virus would be transmitted through food, which right now the CDC says that isn't the case. However, just the normal operations being disrupted at the food plant can create situations where sort of traditional contamination would be more likely, things like salmonella or E. coli or something like that. And those are the types of situations that the prosecutors have looked back and said, you can become a responsible corporate officer because you should have done something different, which ultimately caused people to get sick.
So have there been cases where under this responsible corporate officer statute where people have been sent to prison?
There have indeed. So there's only a couple statutes that allow for this type of criminal liability. Again, because it sort of doesn't fit with how we normally think about how the law should operate, where you have to have obvious intent. But the situations where it has attached are exactly this. So it's been used in cases where there are pharmaceuticals that are misbranded or adulterated, and also in food production. So it's happened in egg cases where eggs are have salmonella in them, and other cases like that. So in fact, this is exactly the type of worry that food producers need to be thinking about.
Seems like they're in a sort of a bad spot if the president says, well, you need to stay open, and yet they have fears about a lot of things happening that maybe, you know, they don't have a lot of control over.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I don't think the way that this has been discussed so far, at least over the last couple of days, has been entirely accurate. So there's been some discussion about limiting liability for food producers and other businesses as they reopen under sort of this age of coronavirus. But the president's executive orders can't get rid of a statute that allows criminal liability, right? So you can't just trump a congressional statute by an executive order. It doesn't work that way. There might be ways that the administration or the government could limit liability, but it's by no means a blanket sort of get out of jail free card if these food producers are not following the proper safety protocols, even if they're asked to stay open under the Defense Production Act.
I think one of the scariest things about this is not that there could be a shortage of meat or a wait for meat, but that the meat itself could be contaminated.
I just want to be clear for your listeners. Now, the CDC has said that there is no evidence yet of contamination through food. However, we're learning more and more about this virus every day. We find out not too long ago, a couple of days ago, that it's been found in pollution particles, so in the air. And so, you know, at this point, a lot of this is about risk. And so when you are a producer, you're a business, you're constantly weighing these risks to your employees, to consumers, but also part of that calculus has to be weighing the risk to yourself and your company from lawsuits and even potential, in some of these rare circumstances with food production, criminal liability.
It sounds to me like each situation needs to be carefully calibrated and each plant needs to really take care how they do things.
I think that's absolutely right. Every plant is going to have to figure out how they individually can reduce risk of the spread of the virus between their employees, and then, of course, taking all the normal safety precautions that they would related to cleanliness and preventing any kind of foodborne illness. And so that's going to differ from plant to plant and the speed of the production line and things like that, which is complicated, of course, by an executive order that essentially says you should be open and operating so we don't have this dip in food the dip in the food supply. And so these executives and these plant managers are just in a really tough situation.
That was Todd Ha, an associate professor of business law and ethics at Indiana University. He talked about the culpability of food processing plant managers and executives that they could face if they keep plants up and running during the COVID-19 crisis, despite efforts by President Trump to try and limit their liability. Professor Ha is not the only critic of the president's action to keep the packing plants open.
And some meat industry experts are questioning what good the president's order might actually do. James McDonald is a visiting research professor in the Department of Agricultural and Resource Economics at the University of Maryland. McDonald says he's not sure that presidential order would change the operation of packing plants. He says a Maryland chicken processor had to depopulate some of its local growers 2 weeks ago, killing 2 million chickens on farms without sending them to the processing plant. Much of the workforce was out sick with the coronavirus. McDonald says he doesn't see how a presidential order can make the workers healthy or force them to show up for work. McDonald adds the president's action may be aimed at preempting mayors and governors who may have been moving to shut plants down for public health reasons. I also spoke with McDonald about the dangers posed by sick workers and whether or not they could spread the coronavirus.
I was talking to someone from the Extension Service about whether or not in packing plants, if someone is ill, they could spread their illness onto the meat. And he said, well, no, it doesn't spread like that. But if somebody had something on his hands and they didn't have a glove on, or if they coughed or sneezed and it went onto the meat, you know, is that a concern?
Well, I'm not a food safety expert. However, One angle I would look at with this is there has been long concerns with spread of pathogens on meat, food safety concerns, you know, spread of salmonella, E. coli, things like that. And the incidence of those pathogens in meat on packing plant tests has declined significantly over the last 20 years. I would this is my opinion. There are people that know more about it, certainly know more about it than I do. But my understanding is that since the mid-90s, the plants probably put a lot more effort into cleaning meat and making into reducing the incidence of pathogens on the meat that are coming out of the plants. Now, that's just a straight story about animal pathogens. I don't know. I personally don't know enough about COVID to know how it would react on meat surfaces.
In the last couple of years, there have been a lot of problems with some kind of fever with the pigs in China. I don't know if that's still a problem over there. I know they had to kill a lot of their hogs. Does it sort of make it worse now because we can't get anything from there?
I would not say for us. They were still largely an importer of pork over time. They are shifting to purchase more chicken because their hog production is down substantially. I would say two things. First, before the coronavirus spread in the U.S., if you were starting at the beginning of 2020 and looking out, we were forecasting noticeable increases broadly in pork, beef, and chicken exports from the U.S., partly because of China demand. And we were also forecasting substantial increases in production for both pork and poultry. I think we're expecting some diminution of that because of the worldwide decline in demand. So in a sense, I think for hog producers, there was a perceived opportunity for expanded export sales and higher returns. That really isn't there anymore now that the virus has spread. What I would also add is that U.S. producers have been quite concerned about the potential spread of hog and poultry diseases, and for that reason have made substantial investments in biosecurity at our growing facilities, that is on hog and poultry farms.
We talk a lot about how this COVID-19 pandemic is going to change how we do things, a lot of things we hadn't really thought about. Do you think that's true with packing plants? Because here they have all of these temperature sensors and all this other type of... Yeah, you think so?
I think that's a big open question. These are, as you can tell when you look at any picture you wander through a plant, these are big, tightly packed places. They've relied for a long time on immigrant labor. They face a whole set of challenges going forward, from the availability of immigrant labor towards concerns over pandemics. I'm inclined to think that when somebody is able to get their head above the immediate problems they face, that people are likely to give some thought to how you might reorganize these plants in the future. But I don't think anybody's thinking about that right now.
Have you done research on the immigrant labor side of it?
I did some work on labor conflicts in the industry back in the 80s and 90s when there was this transformation. Colleagues of mine have done more work specifically on immigrant labor. However, recent ERS work on immigrant labor for agriculture focuses not only on the impact of the changes in U.S. immigration policy towards more limited immigration, but also changes in the Mexican economy that reduce the flows of immigrant labor towards the U.S. and, in fact, reduce the flows within agriculture, even in Mexico. I think at the import of those analyses suggests that we are likely to see... We've seen declining flows of immigrants towards agriculture and I think also towards meatpacking in recent years. An indication of that is rising wages. Their real wages have been rising relative to the rate of inflation now for the last decade. I suspect that we're going to see more of that in those industries. And in agriculture and in meatpacking, people for that reason are going to have to start rethinking how they organize production.
That was James McDonald, a visiting research professor in the Department of Agriculture and Resource Economics at the University of Maryland. He has researched the meat and packing industry for 30 years. McDonald says he isn't sure that that presidential order that would keep packing plants open would necessarily solve the problems of the meat industry or help them stem the spread of COVID-19. You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. Well, Iowa City is at the heart of Johnson County, which so far has been very hard hit by the coronavirus. The mayor there, Bruce Teague, said he was prepared last month to issue a shelter-in-place order for that city if Governor Kim Reynolds did not make a serious movement on a statewide or regional order. The governor never did issue that shelter-in-place order. The call for different local rules harkened back to the passage of the 1968 Home Rule Amendment passed by the citizens of Iowa. The act constitutionalized local control in the state. Bill Peterson is the executive director of the Iowa State Association of Counties. Peterson says the issue has always been about just how far the authority of the county goes in any particular circumstance, including the coronavirus pandemic.
Now, in the case of this COVID-19 and county and city's authorities, there has been an informal opinion issued by the Attorney General.
There's no way that a locality, a county or a city can say, well, we want to open up our restaurants now, even though the state says we can't.
That's what the Attorney General has opined. And so how would that be resolved if a city or a county wanted to contradict that order? Well, they'd have to issue some sort of resolution or maybe pass an ordinance. And then, of course, that would be challenged in court. And, you know, who knows how long that would be before that would be resolved. So I think and what the Attorney General has said and maybe what their county attorney has advised them have written to the governor asking for exceptions to whatever orders she has given. Now, I don't know that she has granted any exceptions.
And Johnson County, I believe, asked the governor for an exemption so they could shelter in place. Is that right?
It's possible. I think Linn County may have done the same thing. I also heard that Story County. And of course, Johnson County early on was one of the locations for, and then, you know, subsequently Cedar Rapids and Linn County have had a significant increase. But now it seems like there's all sorts of little hot spots across the state. But to my knowledge, the governor has not, you know, taken any action beyond those actions that she has issued, either on a regional basis. So there's that region up in Northeast Iowa. She did have specific orders beyond what the other five regions in the state had. So
the regions have really come into play with this recently.
Well, I think it's undefined exactly how far the governor's authority extends. I think, you know, I'm not an attorney. I think that she probably would have a fair amount of success in any sort of court challenge, you know, given the circumstances that this is a public health emergency. Local governments have similar extended authorities in the case of public health emergencies, but their authorities might be that they could impose stricter restrictions on what happens within their community. But again, I don't know that anybody has expressly taken that action, nor has that been challenged if they have. And we just heard that they have requested action from the governor beyond what she has done to date.
Yeah, because I've had people ask me, well, what if cities and counties just want to go the other way and make it less strict? But you're right, I haven't heard of that yet either.
You know, this is, I'll have to tell you, it's a very unprecedented. I think, you know, part of this is individuals have been willing to go along with the proclamations because it seems like it's been in the best interest of citizens in Iowa?
That was Bill Peterson, the executive director of the Iowa State Association of Counties, talking about the effect of home rule during the coronavirus pandemic. In an effort to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, the Woodbury County Jail has increased the use of electronic monitoring rather than incarceration. The county and Sioux City Police are working together to reduce arrests by issuing citations or a summons that requires the defendant to report to court to answer to the charge. Woodbury County jail populations have decreased from a daily average of 230 inmates to around 160 to 170 prisoners, clearing space for an inmate to be quarantined if he or she were to test positive for COVID-19. Woodbury County Chief Deputy Tony Wingert says the jail is taking extra steps to make sure it is clean and sanitary.
Well, we're extra cleaning along with our maintenance staff cleaning. Our correctional staff is also cleaning. We are working with the public defender, the county attorney, and the courts to lower our census inside the facility, and we've done that quite a bit. We've done it enough that we're able to make a medical segregation section where if we have somebody come in off the street and are going to get moved into long term, they first move into one of these areas so we can watch them before we introduce them to the rest of the population. Our law enforcement officers on the street are no longer coming inside the jail unless it's an emergency, meaning if they arrest somebody on the street, we're meeting them at the door and taking the prisoner, so we're not introducing officers up to our facility. We've stopped any kind of programming, meaning like AA, NA, Bible study. We are not allowing anybody to come in to do that. Attorneys are doing all their visitations through video or behind plexiglass, so they're not having face-to-face contact with the individual, skin-to-skin contact, you know, where there's a barrier between them.
Do you do testing of prisoners if you think there's a reason?
If we had reason to believe, yes, we would test. I'm knocking on wood right now. We have not had any reason to test any of the inmates. Our staff, a few of them have been tested just because of contacts they've had outside of here. A friend of a friend or a loved one knew some, you know, so we're following the CDC guidelines. And if they say they need to be tested, they get tested. And again, knocking on wood, we've been clearing all those hurdles.
I've read also crime has been going down in Sioux City since this pandemic really hit. Have you noticed that as well?
Well, yeah, yes. I mean, the cops on the street have been, you know, they've been told to keep safe, and they're working directly with the jail also to not bring in nonviolent offenders. If they can be given a citation, they're written a citation instead of bringing them up to jail, things like that. So yes, we have seen a drop in our customers, as you would say, and that's due to a lot that maybe the public's they're helping out in this pandemic, but also law enforcement is finding creative ways not to bring people to jail.
Oh, really? What are some of those ways?
Just writing tickets. I mean, let's say somebody would normally come to jail on a possession of marijuana. Well, now they're getting a ticket saying, hey, show up on this court date, or a driving while license suspended. They're getting a ticket when normally they would come to jail. They're writing a lot more citations.
Do you see that kind of thing becoming more prevalent even after this is over? I mean, is that working, do you think?
All it's going to do is kill us when we get back open. The courts are going to be overran, and then people are going to come to jail from the tickets. So all you're doing is kicking the can down the road. Now, there are some offenses that, yeah, I'd rather see citations written than somebody come to jail. But there are just times where people, like a driving while license suspended, for example, if he's been caught driving under a suspended license on numerous occasions, well, what good is another ticket going to do that person? Maybe it's time for that person needs to come to jail and say, oh, now it's starting to get serious. So, but right now we're writing citations still. So in effect, we're delaying the inevitable. It means, let's say we open up in June. Well, I can guarantee you in July and August, we're going to be swamped.
I find it kind of interesting that not long after the referendum for the new jail, funding the new jail expanded jail, safer jail was approved, this thing hit. Do you think that this is really kind of a case in point why you need in some ways a new jail to make things safer and more secure?
Yeah, it definitely hammers home the point where we would have a better way to classify inmates, and meaning we would have more sections to put people in, and that would give us more medical areas. So that way we could house a sick population and keep them away from the general population. So we struggle to find creative ways to do that in our existing facility. But in the new, yeah, I wish the new facility was built today.
That was Woodbury County Chief Deputy Tony Winger talking about efforts to prevent the spread of the coronavirus in the jail and how law enforcement is using creative ways to keep people out of jail in the first place.
You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. Support for The Exchange comes from Gregory Giles, investment advisor representative with Legacy Financial LLC in Sioux City, serving the financial planning and investment needs of clients since 2004. Information about Legacy Financial and Greg Giles is available at legacyfinancialllc.com. Financial planning and advisory services offered through RDA Financial Network.
Despite the increase of COVID-19 in Woodbury County, the Sioux City Farmers Market will open for the season next Wednesday, but it will be a stripped-back version of the event we're used to. I talked with Becky Kempers, the Sioux City Farmers Market manager, about what you can expect at the market this summer.
You know, we've always been known as the community hangout during the summer, May through October. We have a lot of families that come down and, you know, just sit and eat and shop. But this year, it is going to look a little different with all these regulations in place and this big pandemic that's been going on. We are going to look a little bit smaller, as in our vendors. So we are only going to have produce, farm-related, and ready-to-eat foods down at the market. So we won't be able to see everyone this year. But next year, hopefully, you know, we can get back in the swing of things and run as a normal market would next year.
Will there be a limit on the number of people that can be sort of inside where the market is?
As of right now, we are not limiting the number of people. So we have put into place signage for everyone, you know, just maintain that social distancing. We're going to have markers on the ground to kind of space out people as they stand in line. And we'll have ample amounts of hand sanitizer stations that we put into place, as well as some extra hand washing stations as well to help people, to help us all stay clean and follow the protocol that the governor's put into place.
I was thinking about that. I was driving by the Morningside branch of the public library, and they had one of those food trucks there. And I was thinking about all the, you know, fun things that go on when it's nice out, whether it be the food trucks or the farmer's market or sort of the downtown events. And it's nice to see the farmer's market and the food trucks kind of coming back.
Yeah, you know, with this nice weather, you know, it comes those kind of outside events too. And I know everybody's eager to get outside and do stuff outside. And, you know, as long as we follow those guidelines that the governor's put into place, you know, maintain that social distancing, you know, and up our, you know, our hygiene protocols, you know, We'll stay safe, but we just ask everyone that if they're going to come down to the market, just to, you know, be kind and be patient with us. We're all still learning with this too.
I know that in the past there's been music and places for kids to hang out. I'm kind of assuming that won't be the case this year.
Yeah, the governor has they've asked us to not do any of that this year at the market. Just because we don't want to make it a place to actually hang out. So our slogan this year, I guess, is to stop, shop, and go. So if you come down to the market, if you plan on coming down to the market, there are going to be some long lines to wait. But if you make a list ahead of time and know what you're going to get, then it should be pretty easy to come down. But yeah, like those events, like music, the pop program that the ISU Extension puts into place last year, they were going to do it this year. All that has been put on hold until we can get back to normal. You know, if you're coming down, just be patient with us. Be kind. I know everyone wants to get out and see everyone because, you know, we are known as that community gathering place. But this year it is going to look a little different. So if you stop, do your shopping quickly, and then head on out. But yeah, we're looking forward to seeing everyone.
That was Becky Kempers, the manager of the Sioux City Farmers Market. The market will open up for the spring and summer season next Wednesday morning next to the Tyson Event Center in downtown Sioux City at the corner of Triview Avenue and Pearl Street. Aside from farmers markets, a lot of small businesses in Northwest Iowa will be opening up in a small way as of Friday. And the Iowa Small Business Development Center is helping those businesses open safely. Lisa Shimkat is the director of the organization. Shimkat says when advising businesses on how to reopen safely, she has to keep in mind a lot of things, from health issues to financial sustainability.
You know, I think everything overlaps. We're kind of in the middle of a three-dimensional Venn diagram here. There used to be very much singular lanes that everyone had, and we all had strengths in it. I would say come the second week in March, we all needed to find out exactly how we could overlap everything just to maintain safety, not only for our businesses, but then also the consumers and the vendors and things like that. So we're not experts in it, but we do have to make sure that as we're helping a business reopen, that we're getting them the right information on the safety aspects. Because even with the governor's proclamation, there's some things that are in there, but sometimes this is just the bare minimum. You have to take into account, you know, are the number of cases in your territory on the increase? Is there something that could maybe lend your clientele to be in a higher risk group? And if that's the case, then we are encouraging folks to do more than what is the stated minimum.
You know, up here in Northwest Iowa, most of the counties are pretty low in COVID cases. Here in Woodbury County, we're kind of a hot spot. So a lot of places, especially restaurants, are just still going to do takeout. They're not going to have people in. So I kind of see where you're coming from with that.
Well, and especially for you guys that are, we call them the border counties, because you're going to have inflow or outflow due to states around us, maybe even being on a stricter lockdown or a lighter. And so, you know, there's a lot of factors go into it versus just saying lights on or lights off. And it should be. It should be that way. We're also working with a lot of the manufacturers and our partner agency, CIRAS, that's C-I-R-A-S, and they are the Center for Industrial Research and Service, and they are the ones that are super focused on the manufacturing side. So we do refer to them when it comes to a lot of the nuances there, because a manufacturing site is going to be so different, whether it's food processing or CNC machines. I think we're going to see a lot of differences as people reopen, but they're all going to have that focus of keeping the patrons safe.
If you go in and say you're working with someone in an area that's not a hot spot, maybe they can reopen a restaurant. What kind of things do you work on with them?
Well, we have a great resource with Iowa State Extension and Outreach, and they are working with the Department of Inspection and Appeals. So we've put together a, I want to say a podcast, but we talked to them about, okay, look at, you know, the seating arrangement, make sure that everything is the 6 feet apart. Talk with all of the servers. Now in the restaurant industry, remember, they also have additional regulations with food safety that they have to adhere to. So they are familiar with having to do additional protocols. So this would just be a few more on top of that. Also teaching all, not just the restaurants, but the restaurants and then some of the retailers that are opening, that you may need to provide additional PPP for your employees, maybe masks if they're requesting it. It can be a fashion statement, some say, but they have to be, they have to listen to what their employees are saying as well, because they also want the employees and the patrons to feel safe as they're coming into those locations, whether it's the restaurant or a retail space. You know, in the restaurants, it will be a little bit of a learning curve as well, as everybody's trying to navigate to it. as I said, we've been working with IDLs, we've been working with the Department of Inspection and Appeals, and we do have some checklist guidelines. I think everybody's very excited to open the state back up, and they also understand that these restaurants that are opening back up have really been hit hard. And I think you're going to see a tremendous response of people wanting to help them. And at the same time, you know, we're going to have to wait in line because they can only have so many people there at one time. But I think everybody realizes that, and they've been very patient as everybody's been navigating through these very, very different rules and it seems like every day there's something different.
You know, I think there's a lot of concern in especially small towns and around rural Iowa that some of these businesses just won't be able to make it after this, that, you know, the coffee shop or the cafe or, you know, the small business on Main Street just won't be able to get back up and running. And I think people are just very concerned about it.
Absolutely. And we are seeing that because in your small communities, and I grew up in small town Iowa, and in these small communities, your business owners are the ones that are also the philanthropists. They're the ones you go to for Project Prom, for the fundraisers. And they're the first ones to donate something, to donate time, to donate a product or donate a service. And when a business is lost in a small community, it has more effect than just the loss of that business. And that's what we see a lot of communities really rallying around. And we started, for this week, we started the five-day challenge. And we're in day two, but the first day was just choose three businesses and comment on their social media and share. We're also working with a lot of businesses statewide on how can I sell on the internet? How do I also expand my reach when it comes to my products? And not only maybe their reach, but when all of a sudden the doors were forced to be shut, they needed to figure out a way to still get their product to the customers. And that's what we've been trying to do as well, is help some of them maybe speed up their process to get online. And even if they're still only selling to their local customers in a smaller radius, they're still able to do some sales. And while those sales aren't enough to keep the business forging forward, it's enough to keep the bills paid until we can get those doors open again.
Yeah, here in Woodbury County in Sioux City, they're going to open up the farmer's market next week. But instead of having the music and the place for kids to hang out and have fun and people to sit and eat and talk, none of that will be there. But people will be able to come and buy produce and other things. But they have to have social distancing. And they have to pretty much, you know, buy and then leave. So they're able to get up and running, but the rules are just different.
Right. And I think we need to look at that as this is our way going forward. Because we can wallow in it or we can, you know, grumble about it, but we're never going to get back to the way it was at the beginning of March. And so we need to look at how can we do it differently so then maybe we can be even more successful. Sometimes it takes something to open our eyes to a new way of thinking. And that's what we're trying to do, is to help these businesses get to that way. And yeah, the farmers markets will definitely be different. And they won't be that big social event anymore. But look at how there's been a resurgence of some things that we never expected before. People shagging the drag. We've seen that around the state where they're using that as a way to replenish food pantries. It's just amazing how many people are really coming together to do these cool things. And they just had one here last weekend, and it was a tribute to the senior class of 2020. So then all the seniors were able to get there and be on Main Street, and people were, you know, singing to them, and it was just a great time.
Yeah, yeah. What was that called? The Dregs?
Shake the Drag.
Shake the Drag. So does that mean like taking all the stuff out and that you don't need or?
It, you know, years and years ago, that's what people used to do on a Friday night, is drive up and down Main Street. And then you'd see your friends, you'd wave at them, maybe you'd pull over and talk to them. And now they're doing kind of the same thing. They're, as they're cruising Main Street, you know, some call it cruise on Main, shake the drag. But it's just another way to actually have some social interaction while practicing social distancing and having some fun with it.
Oh, that, okay. They're cruising.
Yes, they're cruising up and down Main Street. And I know lots of movie theaters are selling popcorn. You have to sign up ahead of time, but then you get like a big bag of popcorn. So you have your popcorn, you're cruising up and down, you're donating food to the local food pantry. I know some cities have also done koozies that they've sold for $5 a piece to try to raise money for some of the nonprofits in the community. So and people are doing Facebook Live posts on it, sharing with family and friends. And they're also doing some of those Facebook things and posting it. So then a year from now, they remember this. And it's kind of fun. It's really cool to see some of those positive things really surface or bubble to the top out of all of the frustration that we've seen lately.
That was Lisa Shimkat, the director of the Iowa Small Business Development Center. The center is helping small businesses that are allowed to reopen this Friday reopen safely so they can stay open in the future. You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. Nonprofits like theaters are hoping to reopen at some point this summer. Lamb Arts Regional Theater in Sioux City is one of them. The theater had to suspend the remainder of the season for May and June. I talked with Lamb Artistic and Managing Director Russ Woolley about a couple of shows coming up in July. One of them will be performed by students, and both will be online.
We did a show last year for our students called We Are Monsters, a musical that was just great fun. They loved it. And that company sent Diana several weeks ago. They said, we've written a show to be done strictly online, and in it's called The Show Must Go Online, and it's pretty clever. We have 18 or 19 of our students. They send the monologues and the songs, and then Diana has sent them out to various students that said they're interested, and they record it, send it back. She gives notes, and they record it again. And then she'll put the whole thing together as a video clip. And then that'll go up on our YouTube channel. And then we'll put that out there. So that'll be recorded. And we hope to do that. That should be done by May 4th. So we'll be sending out the link so people who are interested can see what our students have been up to. And it should be... It's been great fun for them because they've had something to do.
Right.
I got a call, actually a FaceTime, from my good friend, playwright Sean Grennan, about 2 weeks ago. FaceTime rings, and it's Sean, and he and his wife are, they live in New York, but they have a place in the Poconos, so they left the city when all this started. So they're doing okay, and it's nice. And he said he has written a show to be performed online and wanted to know if I would read it, give him some feedback. And so I said, of course. So he sent it to me and I read it, and I called back and I said, oh yeah, let's do this. And so I committed to do that right away. And so that we're going to be, it's called Couples, and it's a comedy. And Sean, a lot of our people will know Sean Grennan. We just did his latest one, Now and Then, opened last season. We've done The Tin Woman. We've done Making God Laugh. He's just really terrific, terrific playwright, and he's become a really good friend over the years. And now that one is with adults, and we're going to be presenting it live. We will do it live for two dates, May 29 and 30. It'll be memorized. It'll be a regular show because the format of it is, it's called Couples. And it is a marriage counselor and three couples that they get together and have a session just like you do. Only it's not at her office now. It's on a Zoom meeting. And so we'll be doing that. Actually, we have a read through this week. We will rehearse online. And then, as I said, that one will be live. We'll put stuff out where there will be a link in it. There's not going to be any fee. There will be no fee for it, but we will get the link out so that you can go to that on 7:30 p.m. on the 29th or the 30th and go in and watch the Lam Theater production of Sean's. There's just a handful of people around the country that are doing this right away because he just wrote it. It's brand new. So I think that's kind of fun.
You're forging ahead and you're fixing up your new building downtown.
That's still working. It's for obvious reasons, a little slow right now. And we're, you know, and Dinah just signed all the papers to submit the part one for historic tax credits because our architects have been working at that for months and that part of it was all done. So she signed it and that goes into the state. So that's all underneath and still working. Because that project, it's, you know, the completion date always has been 2022. So that's down the road a little bit. And my goodness, we need something like this now more than ever, I would say, to get the strength of the arts and of the theater back. And so it just seems really apropos to be working on restoring and bringing that building back to life after all of this stuff.
Yeah. Did you apply for any of the CARES Act?
We had, Diana has applied for a couple things and we've been talking to our accountant and he said, in fact, today we're kind of on our computers what the heck is it called? It's called something, you know, it's one of those relief programs, but it's a EIDL thing, but it's just really difficult to get even on because there's so many people, you know, we'll see. And the thing, you know, it's just not the theater. It's every business that I talk to.
That was Russ Woolley, Lam Theater Artistic and Managing Director. There will be a couple of shows coming up in July at Lam. Both of them will be online. And that's it for this edition of The Exchange. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you next week.